Would you like to have a color photograph of the three Apollo 11 astronauts? We would be happy to send you one if you write to The Voice of America, Washington, D.C., USA, Box 8108. Citizens of the United States are not eligible.
This is The Voice of America. We will return to our live coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of the latest world news.
In the headlines, Apollo astronauts begin preparation for critical blastoff from the moon. Egypt reports Israeli shelling of Suez, but Israel denies it. And the Kenyan police arrest a man on charges of murdering Tom Mboya. Now, the news in detail. The two men who last night took a giant step into the unknown are up and awake at this hour, preparing for the critical blastoff from the lunar surface and the long journey home. Firing of the ascent engine is scheduled in a little less than 2 hours from now, and the engine must work or the astronauts will be hopelessly stranded on the moon. Overhead, astronaut Michael Collins is circling the lunar landscape in the command ship Columbia, preparing for the rendezvous and docking with the Eagle and its crew. The lunar explorers, Armstrong and Aldrin, were aroused from a somewhat fitful night of rest and sleep about 45 minutes ago. Collins was awakened about an hour earlier and informed that all systems aboard the two spacecraft are go. It will take more than 3 hours to accomplish liftoff and docking, and the maneuver is expected to go just as flawlessly as the incredible journey that ended last night when Armstrong stepped slowly down the ladder of the Eagle and first set foot on the moon. The astronauts will be bringing back with them a treasure trove of lunar rocks and dust for analysis here on Earth. They are leaving behind an expensive assortment of equipment, including their cameras, their life support backpacks, and tools and equipment used to carry out a variety of experiments on the moon. The ascent stage of the moon lander itself will be jettisoned and abandoned in lunar orbit after rendezvous with Columbia. The astronauts reported the alien lunar landscape was generally soft and fine-grained at the surface, but firm underneath. They described the view as magnificent, with a beauty all its own. Walking and working were easier than expected, and there was no radiation, as some on Earth had feared. The mysterious Luna 15, the Soviet Union's space probe, is in its 50th moon orbit, and at its closest point is within 10 miles of the lunar surface. Radio Moscow said today that the Luna 15 station is carrying out research in the space around the moon, but gave no details. In Saigon, a spokesman for Premier Tran Van Hoang denied earlier reports that the South Vietnamese cabinet had resigned. He said the premier met with his cabinet today and informed it that a reshuffle was imminent. But he said the premier made no decision when some ministers suggested that the cabinet resign to make the reshuffle easier. The spokesman said the premier asked the cabinet members to continue their work. Egypt reported that the city of Suez came under heavy Israeli artillery and rocket shelling today. A Reuters dispatch from Cairo says a group of newsmen heading for Suez were turned back today because of renewed exchanges of fire. An Israeli spokesman denied that Israeli batteries had fired on the city of Suez. He reported only sporadic shooting incidents across the Suez Canal. Egypt has asked its United Nations ambassador to inform the Security Council of Israel's pre-dawn attack Sunday against the Egyptian island Akkada that led to one of the heaviest Israeli-Egyptian battles since the 1967 war. President Nasser today congratulated the heads of the Egyptian armed forces over the results of yesterday's clashes. From Nairobi, Kenya, a Reuters news bulletin reports that Nairobi police have arrested a man on charges of murdering Tom Mboya, Kenya's economic and planning minister. Mr. Mboya was shot to death a little over 2 weeks ago while shopping in Nairobi. Police gave no further details, but said their investigation is continuing. In Algiers, the first Pan-African Cultural Festival was formally opened today by Algerian President Boumediene. The 10-day festival brings together about 4,000 artists and intellectuals from 30 independent African countries. For the next 12 days, delegates will try to define Africa's culture and determine how it can help shape African unity and independence. Moscow dispatches say three well-known liberal Soviet writers, including poet Evgeny Yevtushenko, have been fired from the editorship board of a popular literary youth journal. The two others are novelist Vasilov Akonov and playwright Viktor Kozov. A magazine spokesman declined to give any reason for the dismissals, which followed long-standing criticism of the publication by Communist Party officials and conservative literary figures. The spokesman merely said it was decided to make some changes in the editorial board, but that these men will continue to cooperate with the journal. The dispatches noted that one of the vacant places on the board was taken by another liberal writer, Anatoly Kuznetsov, whose work in Yusov has frequently come under strong attack. A complaint was filed against Senator Edward Kennedy in Edgartown, Massachusetts today, charging him with leaving the scene of an automobile accident. A young woman was killed and Senator Kennedy slightly injured early Saturday when the car he was driving ran off a bridge. The senator, who said he was in a state of shock after the accident, did not report it to police for several hours. Hundreds of millions of people around the world, presidents, prime ministers, religious leaders, taxi drivers, housewives, and school children, are commenting on the Apollo landing on the moon. People around the globe followed the event and are still following it by television or radio in public meeting places, at work, or in their own homes. Accounts of the Apollo mission were heard in such widely scattered places as tea houses in Asia or around campfires in the Arctic. However, national broadcasters in Communist China, North Korea, and North Vietnam have not given their listeners an account of man's first landing on the moon. World reaction still pouring in is overwhelmingly one of awe, almost disbelief, and praise for the moon mission's achievement. Mixed in with this are some voices warning that space goals should not obscure the fight against injustice and poverty. Meantime, the safe arrival of the astronauts on the moon brought from Pope Paul the exclamation, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace to men of good will. Patriarch Athenagoras of the Eastern Orthodox Church said perhaps the world is on the eve of a new understanding of God. From Beirut, Lebanese President Charles Elu cabled President Nixon that the moon mission is a victory for man over his condition on earth. That is the news. This is Paul Parks reporting on The Voice of America.
And this is The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. I'm Larry West in Washington, D.C. Now we go to Houston, Texas for a progress report from VOA's Rhett Turner.
During the last 15 or 20 minutes, we have been listening to communication between Mission Control on Earth and both Columbia in orbit around the moon and Eagle on the surface of the moon. It's a bit scratchy at this point.
Over.
That noise you hear is part of the dampening or muting circuitry going up to the spacecraft Columbia, which is orbiting. There's a good solid lock on the signal with Eagle, and they're on the surface of the moon. Anytime that astronauts Armstrong or Aldrin say anything, we hear it quite clearly back here on Earth. The rendezvous radar was turned on Eagle just a few moments ago, about 15 minutes ago, and Eagle did achieve a lock on Columbia as it whizzed overhead at some 4,000 kilometers per hour, about 111 kilometers above the surface. The radar lock was lost momentarily, and we have heard no confirmation of having achieved it again. If they do get a good solid lock and are able to track it for just a few minutes, then possibly we may narrow down the exact position of the lunar module there on the surface. I might emphasize something which Flight Director Cliff Charlesworth told us all in a change of shift briefing here this morning. That is that there is no danger at all of this. The fact that we don't know the exact spot on the moon at which point the lunar module is resting does not in any way affect the safe takeoff or trajectory after liftoff of the lunar module. It could affect a rocket burn by as much as possibly 20 feet per second, he said, in correcting for any slight deviations in the path of the lunar module as it sat down on the surface. This, of course, is well within the tolerances of all of the power systems, the rocket and maneuvering devices, and was anticipated there in giving Neil Armstrong the latitude he needed in order to find a smooth spot to land on. To the best of everyone's knowledge, the lunar module is slightly to the west and slightly to the north of the exact footprint or landing pad area. Just a little farther west, just a little bit farther north. That was the best information that we received last night. And throughout the night, there has been no final resolution of this. They were going to attempt to locate the lunar module by having Mike Collins first go through what is called a P-52 alignment with landmarks on the surface, particularly a crater that is well known to all of the Earth mappers. And then while he is tracking that crater, or shortly thereafter, when his exact flight path, orbital path, is known, then if the rendezvous radar on board the LEM could lock in on Columbia, the command module, and get information in tracking the command module as it goes overhead, then all of this information could be correlated to deduce the exact position of Eagle on the surface. Don't believe that's been accomplished yet, although the astronauts have been busily working at this during the last 15 or 20 minutes. They are taking advantage of this opportunity while it exists, while Columbia comes overhead. The liftoff from the surface will be about 2 hours from now, just a little under 2 hours, when the Eagle is scheduled to blast off with the ascent stage, the top part of the lunar module, leaving the bottom descent stage with those legs there sitting on the surface, acting as the launch pad, and also the experiments, hopefully the laser detector and the passive seismometer, to continue functioning and sending information back to Earth. There was a false reading last night. We understood earlier that Lick Observatory in California did get a response when a laser beam was flashed from the Earth to the moon, but that particular reading was in error, apparently. This morning we understand that they have not, none of the telescopes on Earth with the laser equipment have yet found that little device sitting on the surface of the moon. That would be another good way of finding the exact position of the lunar module. This laser reflector is a series of finely honed mirrors, three sides in what is called a corner mounting position. There are a number of these tiny corner reflectors which reflect light back in precisely the same direction from which it comes. And it would enable any telescope on Earth shining a laser beam at the moon. Here's some conversation.
I used Capella in the last sighting, and it's a good ways near the edge, good ways away from the center of D-10-4. I'm wondering if it would pay any to use...
That is Buzz Aldrin.
Alpharat's star number one. It might be a little closer. However, it would delay things a little since I'd have to designate the radar. Out of the way, over.
That was Buzz Aldrin giving a report on some of his star sightings. He's also doing sightings on stars in an effort to locate his exact position on the surface. That's it for the moment here. Back to you in Washington.
And here is a bulletin from the Voice of America. England's Jodrell Bank Observatory says it thinks the Soviet spacecraft Luna 15 is landing on the moon. We repeat, England's Jodrell Bank Observatory says it thinks the Soviet spacecraft Luna 15 is landing on the moon. That was a bulletin from the Voice of America. And speaking of landing on the moon, it wasn't too many hours ago that the United States spacecraft landed on the moon. We had just heard from Rhett Turner describing what is happening now on the moon. And if you were with us, you heard Rhett Turner when he described the walk on the moon. Man taking his first step on the lunar surface. Here is VOA Rhett Turner as he described that event.
Neil has stepped down. He's now down on the foot pad. Armstrong's foot is on the foot pad.
Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
It's very dark.
What okay, you see? I just checked, getting back up to that first step. It's not even collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up. Roger, we copy. It's a pretty good little jump.
He wants to check how hard it is to get back up to that first step. It's quite a reach. He has a foot down on the foot pad. We can't tell if he's stepped off onto the surface
this
yet.
This is Houston, F2, 1/160th second for shadow photography on the sequence camera.
It's a silhouetted picture. Very difficult
to see. At the foot of the ladder, the lamb foot pads are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine.
Armstrong is standing on the foot pad. We can see him moving around now. He is undoubtedly...
I'm going to step off the lamb now.
He's stepping off. He has put his left foot off on the surface of the moon. Man is
That's
on the moon.
One small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
One small step for man, one giant leap for man. Neil Armstrong's first words. On the surface of the moon.
And that's the way it sounded about 14 hours ago on the Voice of America as Rhett Turner described the first step on the moon. It was about 20 minutes later that spacewalking astronaut Neil Armstrong was soon joined by his colleague Edwin Aldrin, the second man to set foot on the moon. Shortly after they began collecting samples of lunar rock, the voice of Mission Control informed them that they had a telephone call from Earth, from the President of the United States.
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you. Over.
That would be an honor.
Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you... For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they too join with the in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. For one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this Earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done, and one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here representing not only the United States, but and of peace of all nations. And with interest and a curiosity and
but the vision for the future. Honor for us to be able to participate here today.
And thank you very much, and I look forward, all of us look forward to seeing you on the Hornet on Thursday.
Look forward to that very much, sir.
And that was the conversation between Moonwalkers Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and President Richard Nixon. Soviet Premier Kosygin congratulated the American people today through former Vice President Hubert Humphrey on the Apollo 11 triumph. He asked Mr. Humphrey, who is traveling in the Soviet Union as a private citizen, to tell the United States the Soviet Union wants to cooperate for peace. Mr. Humphrey told reporters after the 2.5-hour meeting that Premier Kosygin was complimentary about the flight and appeared desirous of cooperation with the United States, both in space and in solving global problems. That was the observation of former Vice President Hubert Humphrey following a conversation with Soviet Premier Kosygin. Other congratulations have come from the Soviet Union on the flight of Apollo 11, and VOA's David Lent has the story.
The first high-level Soviet message of congratulations for the Apollo success came from Communist Party leader Leonid Brezhnev in Warsaw to attend the celebrations of the 25th anniversary of the communist regime in Poland. He paused before the American ambassador at a reception of foreign diplomats at Warsaw Airport. Speaking in Russian, Mr. Brezhnev told Ambassador Walter Stussel, "I wish you success." A top Soviet space scientist was more explicit. The chairman of the Soviet Commission for the Promotion of Interplanetary Flight, Leonid Sedov, praised the landing and moonwalk as a great scientific achievement and one of tremendous social significance, which, he said, will develop scientific cooperation and strengthen peace. Mr. Sedov said he hopes for greater Soviet-American cooperation in space, but that, he said, depends on the general international situation. And he added, "We hope that cooperation in space, in turn, will help improve the international climate." Another Soviet scientist, Konstantin Porchevsky, could hardly contain his enthusiasm after witnessing film of the moonwalk. Like the first cosmonaut, Yuri Gagarin, he declared, "Astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin have written a glorious page in the history of the cosmos." Mr. Borshevsky, who is vice director of the Moscow Planetarium, admitted that "what I saw excited me very much," and he declared that the lunar objects collected by the astronauts will give science invaluable results on the further exploration of the moon. East European press comment has also been exceedingly enthusiastic in its praise of the Apollo mission. The Polish Communist Party newspaper Trybuna Ludu, for example, declared that the landing of Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin on the moon can only be compared with the triumph of Columbus. And the Polish newspaper continued, "May our thoughts, the thoughts of 3,000 million inhabitants of the earth, help them and contribute to their strength in performing the other, no less difficult stage of the task, the return to the home planet." A similar theme was heard on Radio Bratislava. The Slovak radio station said, "We are keeping our fingers crossed for the astronauts and wish them a happy return to Earth." Radio Prague reported that the Czechoslovak press gave heavy and enthusiastic play to the Apollo story. The trade union newspaper Pravda, for example, headlined its story, "A historical effort of mankind." The Romanian Communist Party newspaper Scintea was equally lavish in its praise. The moon landing, it declared, is undoubtedly one of the most extraordinary events in the whole history of mankind. The first words spoken by man from the moon, Scintea continued, have aroused a tremendous wave of enthusiasm in the whole world. Apollo coverage in Soviet media was markedly more restrained. Soviet television was joined only by Bulgarian television in East Europe in failing to provide coverage during the moonwalk. Instead, Soviet television provided a 7-minute package of film after the walk had ended. Radio Sofia also provided restrained coverage while giving prominent play to an interview stressing that unmanned space flights are cheaper and safer. Considerably more enthusiastic was the driver of a Sofia streetcar. "Good for Armstrong," he is reported to have said. "Tell him I'll give him a free ride on my streetcar if he comes to Bulgaria." David Lent, Voice of America, European Bureau.
The astronauts have now been on the moon 20 hours and 8 minutes. And in just about an hour and 20 minutes, they will be leaving the moon. The question is, will we be able to see that? And maybe Merle Waugh and Rhett Turner can help us answer that question. Merle?
Yeah, Rhett, I was wondering what you had heard down there about the possibility of leaving the lunar TV camera on during liftoff.
The lunar TV camera, of course, is getting its power from the descent stage. It's my understanding from, in fact, this question has been asked many times. The minute they press the severing connections between the ascent stage and the descent stage, the camera will go off. This occurs a split second before the rocket fires and the liftoff begins. We'll see television possibly right down to that moment or second before liftoff.
Yeah, I was not sure what systems were in the ascent stage. I thought
You can bet your boots all of the people who work in television have asked that question many times.
And they did not deploy that other antenna, too, so I know the antenna would be going up with the ascent stage. So
that's right. Yeah. That obviously is the answer, is the high-gain antenna through which we were getting the signal will depart from the descent stage at liftoff.
Yeah, okay.
What's the reason, Rhett, do you know, why they can't some way leave a TV camera there?
Well, this just was the way this device was planned. You see, well, as Merle mentioned a moment ago, there's the high-gain antenna. All of the radio devices, the communication devices, are in the ascent stage. That descent stage holds primarily fuel and the descent engine, plus these modular containers for the experiments package and the feet. That's just about all there is down there, and batteries for the descent stage. The main power supply during the lunar stay, descent and lunar stay, would be those batteries in the descent stage. The ascent stage had to be cut to the very limits, just as light as possible, so only the things which are necessary to get off the moon and back up into orbit are inside the ascent stage. This, of course, included that high-gain communications antenna for the unified S-band system back to Earth, and the rendezvous radar. And I'm positive that all of the transmitters are in the ascent stage, too. And so once that ascent stage severs its connections, then we would lose the TV picture from the surface, which goes up through the descent stage.
Yeah, it's possible at some future mission why this could be rigged up so we could get a picture of a liftoff from the lunar surface, but
yeah,
I don't think they're ready for this trip.
It means realigning the power supply situation and having a transmitter and antenna there. You mentioned that high-gain deployable antenna, but the extra thing needed would be a transmitter there inside the descent stage.
Right.
Thank you, Rhett. And, of course, the Voice of America will bring that to you as it happens. And that happening will be in about 1 hour and 25 minutes from now. We'd like to remind our listeners in the Middle East who are tuned to 238 megacycles medium wave or to 6015 or 7285 kilocycles that they should now switch to 17855 or 17760. In the Far East, listeners who are now hearing us on 5955 should now switch to 9740. And in South Africa, if you're listening to 15360, unless you can pick up one of the other frequencies, we'll be leaving the air for about a half an hour. This program is originating in Washington, D.C. We will return to our live Voice of America coverage of the mission of Apollo 11 following this report of Late World News.
Astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins are busy at work preparing for a lunar blastoff and link-up to begin their journey home. British scientists at the Jodrell Bank Observatory have just announced that the Soviet spacecraft Luna 15 has apparently landed on the moon. They said they believe the Luna is about 800 kilometers from the United States astronauts. The United States lunar lander Eagle is scheduled for a little less than an hour and a half from now. Collins is circling overhead in the command ship Columbia, preparing for the critical maneuver that must work if the lunar explorers are to be brought safely home. The men aboard both ships have been awake for several hours and have been informed by mission control that both of their craft are performing well and all of the systems are go. It will take more than 3 hours to accomplish liftoff and docking, but the maneuver is expected to go just as flawlessly as the incredible journey that ended last night when man set foot on the moon. Egypt said the city of Suez came under heavy rocket and artillery fire from Israeli forces today. Israel denied the charge, but reported sporadic shooting incidents across the canal. A Reuters bulletin from Nairobi says that police have arrested a man on charges of murdering Tom Mboya. The Kenyan economic and planning minister was shot to death a little over 2 weeks ago. The suspect was arraigned before a magistrate's court. A spokesman for South Vietnamese Premier Tran Van Hoang denied earlier reports that the South Vietnamese cabinet had resigned. He said the premier announced that a reshuffle was imminent, but made no decision when some ministers suggested that the cabinet resign to make the reshuffle easier. Reports from Moscow say three well-known liberal Soviet writers, including the poet Evgeny Yevtushenko, have been fired from the editorial board of a popular literary youth journal. A spokesman for the journal gave no reason for the dismissals. In Algiers today, President Houari Boumediene opened the first Pan-African Cultural Festival. The 10-day festival will bring together about 4,000 artists and intellectuals from throughout the African continent. That is the news in brief. This is Paul Parks reporting on The Voice of America.
This is The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. I'm Larry West in Washington. In a highly unusual gesture, Monday's edition of the New York Times devotes its entire editorial page to the United States manned landing on the moon. The first of three editorials says this:
in the long evolution of the human race up from the primeval ooze, no more significant step has ever been taken than yesterday's, when man the worldling truly became but little lower than the angels and first set foot upon another planet. For thousands and thousands of years, all through the brief span of recorded history and through the dim ages of the darkening past, that puny creature, endowed with the most powerful of all weapons, the human brain, has raised his eyes, his arms, his aspirations, first to the hills and the mountaintops, then to the skies and the stars. And now he has attained the unattainable. He has lifted himself from this little speck of matter to walk the surface and probe the depths of another world. True, it is an even tinier world than the one we know, presumably a lifeless world, a forbidding world, but another world. This is the year, this the month, the week, the day, when, so far as we can know, for the first time in all the eons of existence of this universe of ours, a sentient being has transported himself from his earthly habitat to a different sphere floating in the endless sea of space. The men that landed yesterday on the moon represented not any group or creed or nationality. They represented all humanity, and they carried with them a little bit of all the hopes and struggles of mankind to attain the heights throughout the ages. Yesterday, July 20th, 1969, will be marked forever as the day man transcended the bonds of his nature and his environment, and the human race entered a new era leading to realms beyond comprehension and even beyond imagination. Man has realized the unrealizable because he dared to conceive the inconceivable. Now one can believe that the limitations to the accomplishments of man are set only by the limitations of the human spirit.
Another editorial in Monday's New York Times is entitled New Priorities. It takes a hard look at a familiar issue involving the American space program.
The monumental achievement of man's landing on the moon poses for the United States a profound question, whether to follow up at once the lunar triumph or to pause in the conquest of space for a comparable crash program to treat our domestic ills. It is not the moon program alone that has prevented the nation from doing what it should to improve the quality of life, and that program should not be allowed to explain or excuse the failure. When Vice President Agnew talks seriously of putting a man on Mars by the end of the century, however, it is time to take renewed thought of the nation's priorities. For a program leading to a manned journey to Mars would be of a staggeringly different financial dimension from that required to explore the moon. This country could undertake such a project by itself only at the cost of grossly neglecting its pressing social needs. After yesterday's dramatic event, few will be rash enough to discount the possibility of an eventual landing on that planet. But if the objective is to be pursued at all in the foreseeable future, it should be pursued only in conjunction with other world powers, preferably with all of them under the auspices of the United Nations. Not only would costs for any one nation then become endurable, but the goal itself would be a spur to that unity here on Earth, which is the best of all justifications for man's exploration of the universe.
And yet another Times editorial, Monday, examines some potential scientific breakthroughs that may result from the Apollo 11 mission.
Science, of course, will be the immediate great gainer from this triumph of human reason. It looks to the moon, above all, for new light on the mysteries of creation, both of the material universe and of life itself. The origin of the moon is the first question toward whose answer the findings at Tranquility Base will provide indispensable new data. Was this new world men have finally reached once part of this planet, torn away by vast tidal forces? Or is it an interloper from distant space, captured by accident as it wandered through infinity? Or, as many suspect, is it a smaller twin brother of this globe? Soon the answers may be known. The study of the moon will occupy many different branches of science for decades and centuries ahead. But even while that important work progresses, other scientists will be using the lunar surface as a platform for studying the universe beyond the tiny two-body system that men have populated. Optical and radio telescopes on the moon will uncover new secrets of this amazingly complicated universe and pose new riddles akin to those raised by the recent discoveries of quasars and pulsars. And the moon will also serve as a launching pad for even more daring flights to further objectives beyond that which Apollo 11 has reached. But all these glittering prospects lie in the tomorrows ahead. For the moment, there can only be enormous satisfaction at the immense leap forward all mankind has made.
Those observations were from the Monday edition of the New York Times, which paid an unusual tribute to Apollo 11 by devoting its entire editorial page to the mission. Headlines outside the United States continue to acclaim the landing of the two men on the moon. With a summary of reactions in Southeast Asia, here is Voice of America correspondent Roy Heineke.
Astronauts Armstrong and Aldrin barely had time to get back into their spacecraft before reaction to their moonwalk began in Southeast Asia. In Malaysia, the nation's king and prime minister, both of whom followed the moon landing and the historic walk by shortwave radio, cabled congratulatory messages to President Nixon and the American people. The king of Malaysia, in his message, stressed the hope that the achievements of the U.S. space program will serve as a reminder to the nations of the world that peace and goodwill are essential to further exploration of space. He told President Nixon that he was praying for the safe return of the three astronauts who, as he described it, were risking their lives for science. Prime Minister Tunku Abdul-Rahman, in a separate statement, said that the praiseworthy efforts gained by American scientists from the courage of the three astronauts has won the admiration of the world. Also in Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Malaysia, the Malay language newspaper Berita Harian called the moonwalk of the two astronauts a victory for all mankind. And it is hoped, it said, it will bring the maximum benefit to future generations. In Thailand, the newspaper Bangkok World noted that Monday's space adventure of astronauts Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins infected a great part of the world, and the paper's editorial added, it is safe to say that never in the history of mankind has so large a portion of the world's population been so emotionally involved in a single event. The proof positive of the benefits of a free society, the editorial continued, are not underlined simply by the technological achievement of the U.S. space program, but in coordination with the freedom of expression combined to show that national intention must be joined by national openness. In considering the philosophy behind the American effort, the editorial concluded, it seems fair to assume that the world as a whole will participate in the benefits of this new approach to the mysterious. Roy Heineke, Voice of America, East Asian Bureau.
In South Vietnam, a leader of the country expressed the usual happiness with the Apollo accomplishment, but added a personal wish of his own. Saigon correspondent Wayne Hyde explains.
South Vietnamese President Nguyen Van Thieu sent a message of congratulations to President Nixon, the American people, and the astronauts, referring to the moon landing as a new frontier of human beings. The message ended with a hope for the complete success and safe return of the astronauts, and for further successes in American space endeavors. And Vice President Nguyen Cao Ky said, I have a very great admiration for the three American astronauts. I am sure their families and the American people are very proud of them. Asked if he'd like to trade places with Neil Armstrong, the Vice President jet pilot laughed and said, yes, yes, yes. I want to go to the moon before I become too old. Scientists, religious leaders, entertainers, everyone had a comment on the moon flight. One science writer who 2 years ago visited Cape Kennedy told Voice of America the landing and moonwalk was, in his opinion, the greatest scientific achievement the world has ever known. The director of Vietnam Press, the government's official news agency, said he had never doubted for a moment that American astronauts would make it safely to the moon. One of South Vietnam's most famous singers said she has been singing songs about the moon for years, but if she were there right now, she said, she would sing what she called a song of peace to the astronauts. And a Catholic priest told Voice of America that the landing and the walk on the moon was what he called the priceless result of science and a complete faith in God. This is Wayne Hyde, Voice of America in Saigon.
The early bird got to watch the lunar landing in Hong Kong, where VOA correspondent Ian Stewart reports that local television acted like an alarm clock in waking viewers for the historic event.
A Hong Kong television station woke viewers at 5 a.m. local time this morning with the tune Fly Me to the Moon, just in time to give them a first-hand account of the lunar module touchdown. The Apollo 11 astronauts in Eagle landed on the moon at 5:17 a.m. local time. The station had advised viewers to leave their sound on overnight so they could be awakened. Hong Kong's two radio stations stayed open throughout the night to bring listeners up-to-the-minute details on the moon mission, and one station relayed the Voice of America's report of the landing without interruption until its scheduled morning program began. Many residents woke early to follow the landing. A pre-dawn jogger carrying a transistor radio called out to another early riser, they've landed. The space feat has been so well publicized here that nobody could be in doubt about to whom he was referring. The landing and subsequent moonwalk was the featured story in all major papers and in the news reports of radio and television stations which gave more airtime to the mission than to any past event. The coverage here contrasted strikingly with the total news blackout on the event in communist China. Peking has ignored the Apollo 11 mission as it has kept silent about previous space flights over the past few years. Some news of the event will trickle into communist China, but millions of people in remote areas will not know that man has landed on the moon. This is Ian Stewart, Voice of America, Hong Kong.
The astronauts have now been on the moon 20 hours and 29 minutes, and just about 5 minutes over 1 hour we'll be bringing the coverage of the liftoff from the moon. But with a look at Israeli comment about the lunar landing, we go now to correspondent Charles Lord.
Israel awoke this morning to headlines of a man on the moon and of full-scale warfare along the Suez Canal. The two stories competed for precedence, with the moon mission winning out in the majority of cases. Probably the most significant editorial comment on the moon mission came from the independent daily Haaretz. It noted the coincidence of the voyages of Apollo 11 and the mysterious Luna 15, and concluded that Israel really has no interest in the outcome of the contest between the United States and the Soviet Union, but only in the scientific achievement as such. The Haaretz editorial then goes on to add, "Our hearts, however, are with the American mission in the hope it will be crowned with success. All our upbringing, everything we have been taught, puts us on the side of those who do what they do out in the open." The English language Jerusalem Post, wishing the astronauts a safe return, defends the Apollo mission against criticism that it is a waste of resources that might be put to better use combating ignorance and poverty. The Daily points out that the greatest part of the money spent has gone to subsidize basic and technical research and to create new techniques and advanced materials that may well create a new and greater American wealth in the next decade. The chief rabbi of Israel and spiritual leader of the country's Sephardi community, Rabbi Yitzhak Nissim, said that the mission's success must of necessity strengthen man's sense of awe before his creator. "But putting a man on the moon will prove to have been worthwhile," he went on, "only if it teaches mankind humility, if it opens a new chapter in civilization in which man will seek to walk in the way of the Lord and put off pettiness in his dealings with his fellow men." This is Charles Lord, Voice of America in Jerusalem.
And finally, Australians seem to have a special interest in the Apollo flight, where much of the television and tracking relays for the lunar landing flight are located. Here's VOA's Robert Chancellor with a report.
Australia had a front row seat for Monday's historic moon telecast and seemed to enjoy every minute of it. Prime Minister John Gorton led his nation in watching the spectacle. He drove to the Honeysuckle Creek tracking station in the mountains near the capital of Canberra following the successful moon landing. After a tour of the electronics-packed structure, Mr. Gorton told newsmen he had been blinded by science, explaining that he had asked the Australian technicians on duty what the various knobs and dials and squiggly green lines were for, that he had been told and couldn't begin to pretend to understand. Prime Minister Gorton also issued a formal statement at that time, calling the landing of men on the moon a peaceful triumph for all mankind. "It is a success that excites the wonder and admiration of all. Australia is proud to have played a part," he added, "through its tracking station and the park's radio telescope, which provided the television pictures of the extravehicular activity or moonwalk." Mr. Gorton thanked the astronauts, wished them Godspeed and a safe return. Later in the day, the Australian leader cabled a message of congratulations to President Nixon. The walk on the moon came near the end of the Monday lunch hour in Sydney, and extended lunch periods were the order of the day. Crowds gathered 10 deep outside television shops. Traffic came nearly to a standstill. Early in the morning, it was quite ordinary to see people carrying radios and television sets into their offices. The viewers were described as subdued. There were no great shouts or cheers. One observer noted it was as if it were a deep personal experience for each one who watched. And the lull in activity in this normally bustling city was said to compare favorably with that on Melbourne Cup Day, the afternoon in November when Australia's most passionately followed horse race is held and the entire nation traditionally comes to a standstill for 3 minutes. The Australians saw a better picture than the rest of the world due to their proximity to the signal, and they saw it a fraction of a second sooner than the rest of the world. The transmission was described as Merit 5, the highest quality, nearly comparable to portrait quality. One Sydney newspaper was on the streets in less than 2.5 hours with a full front page picture of the first step onto the moon. All radio and television stations in the country, 290 broadcasters in all, planned to carry the event. There are a million examples of reaction to the Apollo 11 mission, but one of the most imaginative is this. A Qantas Airlines jet pilot, due to leave Sydney Thursday afternoon for a flight to the United States West Coast, has asked for and received permission to delay his plane's departure by 3 hours. The reason? He hopes to be over the Pacific in the right place at the right time to see the fiery re-entry of Apollo 11's return. Robert Chancellor, Voice of America in Australia.
And this is the Voice of America in Washington with its continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. I'm Larry West, and with me here in the studio is Merle Waugh from NASA. And Merle, probably some of our listeners haven't been able to be with us all through the coverage, and maybe we can kind of refresh their memories of just how the LEM landed on the moon. How did it get down there?
Well, of course, most of them have been up somewhat familiar with the operation, but the first step was to separate the LEM from the command and service module in its orbit about the moon. And then this was followed by a slight orbital change that put them down to the same orbit that we used on Apollo 10, with a minimum altitude of about 50,000 feet, or I guess that's, what, 15 kilometers, or kilometers, as you say here.
We tried.
And from that point on, at about the minimum point, the primary descent stage engine was thrusted against the direction of motion, slowing the spacecraft up, and then eventually pointing it down until the thrust was acting as a primarily as a like lift on a helicopter, and then eventually slowing it down and then setting it very gently down on the lunar surface. As it turned out, Armstrong and Aldrin, as they approached their nominal impact point, were able to observe they were coming down toward the center of a large crater that would appear to be filled with boulders, and so they chose one of the options that was open to them and drifted a little farther downrange, a little off to the right, into a clear area somewhat to the north and west of the intended impact point.
Now, where they were going to land, this crater, this was even off the planned course, wasn't it?
I'm not sure at this time how close that crater was to the intended impact point. It could be a problem of us not knowing the details of the lunar surface at that point. Our previous photography and observations did not have the resolution required to know every detail of the lunar surface, but it does appear that maybe the nominal impact point was a little bit off from what was intended. But anyway, this is the way the mission was planned, with this optional shift of landing point.
Uh-huh. Now, standing by in Houston to bring us up to date on the activities there is Rhett Turner. Rhett, you have a report for us?
We just a few moments ago heard capsule communicator Bruce McCandless talking to Neil Armstrong, and Neil gave us a very clear description of this, what the surface of the moon looked like around the spacecraft. Let's just tune in on that.
Which do not have a discernible rim. The ground mass throughout the area is a very fine sand to a silt. And I'd say the thing that would be most like it on Earth is powdered graphite. Immersed in this ground mass are a wide variety of rock shapes, sizes, textures, rounded and angular, many with varying consistencies. As I said, I've seen plain, what looked to be plain basalt and vesicular basalt, others with no crystals, some with small white phenocrysts, maybe 1 to less than 5%. And we are in a boulder field where the boulders range generally up to 2 feet, with a few larger than that. Now, some of the boulders are lying on top of the surface, some are partially exposed, and some are just barely exposed. And in our traverse around on the surface, and particularly working with the scoop, we run into boulders below the surface that is probably buried under several inches of the groundmass.
That was Neil Armstrong describing the lunar surface around him. He said later that there seemed to be a relation to large, all of this surface area on which they landed seemed to have a relation to the big football field-sized crater over which he had to move in order to find a smooth spot to land. That's the most interesting thing in the last half hour. Back to Washington now.
Thank you, Rhett. And, of course, Rhett Turner will be standing by in Houston, and our entire crew will be standing by here in Washington and reporters around the world, because in just about 30 minutes, at 17 hours 30, we will start with our special broadcast throughout the world on the liftoff of the LEM from the moon, getting prepared to come back to Earth. We want to remind our listeners in the Far East who are tuned to 9565-9590 and 9740 kilocycles to now switch to 11790, 11850, 15190. And listeners in West Africa who are listening to us on 11970 kilocycle shortwave should now switch to 6035. We are going to be continuing our coverage of the flight of Apollo 11, bringing you right up to the time when the mission to leave the moon will be getting underway, and the astronauts will be rejoining the mothership, and then, of course, the journey begins back to Earth. We are going to have some news for you on the hour in special English, and then we will return from the news with more reports concerning the Apollo 11 mission. So stay tuned to the frequencies. This program is coming to you from Washington, D.C.